When I started writing kids' books about 4 years ago, I created this community of ants that live in an ant colony underneath the brick patio. That's how this all started. And I got a few books in. I got an idea and I just kept writing and writing and writing about this colony. And a friend of mine who was reading them said, "Ron, it's so cool that you have such a strong matriarch running your colony," because they had a queen that was in charge of the colony. And it just hit me that my dad died. I didn't have a father. So creating this world that I created, it was run by a woman, a strong woman, intelligent woman, with the prince. Those are the two primary people in control of this colony. I didn't realize at the time that I was kind of writing about my childhood while I was writing the stories about this ant colony. And there's been similar things going on throughout this process that I kind of call a kismet. I've never been happier professionally. And it's all because of my grandson stomping on anthills in the backyard one day.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by the GoingNorthPodcast.com shop. It is going to help you have northbound direction to your own success. If you want a great inspirational quote like "advance others to advance yourself," or "today a reader, tomorrow a leader," heck, even some puns like "pile on and always fully booked" on your tote bag, mug, hoodie, heck, even a t-shirt, and many, many other items, head over to GoingNorthPodcast.com, click on the shop tab, and cop yourself some merchandise indeed. And that's GoingNorthPodcast.com/shop. And today on the highlight reel, Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, my friends, courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth going strong today, known as Podmatch.com. The wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts and that they're cool to freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than two cucumbers indeed. That's right indeed, because today's wonderful guest, fellow author, y'all, is a child of the king, y'all. That's right indeed, a fellow Christian, y'all. And not only that, he is also a wonderful man who has a whole bunch of wonderful experience in the IT consulting field, as well as a husband and a grandfather. So let's give it up for the R to the K himself, the fabulous Ron Kinsherf. How you doing today, Ron?
All right, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing all right. Glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's right indeed. So my goodness, as with all introductions, they're not allowed to be 5 days long and are probably only covered, I don't know, metaphorically a minute in those 5 days. So mind filling us in on how you became the awesome Ron that you are today?
How far you want to go back? My mom and dad met. I could go for that far back. My mom was from Manhattan. My dad is from Brooklyn. One of their first dates was at a Brooklyn Dodgers game. And, you know, my dad was a Dodgers fan. My mom was a Yankees fan. So, but anyway, that's how they met. And then eventually they moved to Midwest, Quincy, Illinois, where I'm located right now, a town of about 45,000 people. And, I was one of six kids. My dad passed away when I was five or six. Yeah, he had cancer back in the late 60s. So my aunt, mom ended up raising six kids by herself with really the whole family out in the East Coast. So very stressful. Her brother at the time wanted her to move back so she could be around family, but she decided to stick around and relied on the community and our neighborhood to get her through. She had ended up going back to school, came in for a psychiatric nurse in our community. So that's kind of the influence I've had. And what's funny about that is when I started writing kids books about 4 years ago, I created this community of ants that live in an ant colony underneath the brick patio. That's how this all started. And I got a few books in, you know, I hadn't published anything, but I got an idea and I just kept writing and writing and writing about this colony. And a friend of mine who was reading them said, "Ron, it's so cool that you have such a strong matriarch running your colony," because they had a queen that was in charge of the colony. And it just hit me that my dad died. I didn't have a father. So creating this world that I created, it was run by a woman, a strong woman, intelligent woman, with the prince. Those are the two primary people in control of this colony. I didn't realize at the time that I was kind of writing about my childhood while I was writing the stories about this ant colony. And there's been similar things going on throughout this process that I kind of call a kismet that has occurred, you know, on this journey I've gone on over the last, you know, 3.5-4 years. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but, you know, I was in IT for 30 years. My degree is in radio and TV. I provided solutions to businesses large and small. And then I got to the point where I was incredibly stressed out, wasn't happy, wasn't eating well, wasn't sleeping well. And just one night, my wife just said, just quit. All right, well, what are we going to do? She says, just quit. Don't worry about it. We'll figure something out. So I quit. No real game plan. And in the meantime, we were having, you know, we had grandkids popping it left and right. And the way I would play with the oldest grandchild in town at the time was I would make up stories with them all the time. So my daughter-in-law suggested I start writing these down, and I kind of poo-pooed it. Like, yeah, I'll figure something out. How am I going to make money doing that? I'll do something else. And I had never written anything like that before, done anything like that before. But then I got an idea one night out, and I was barbecuing outside, and that grandson was stomping on all the anthills on my back patio. And I'm just watching them do that. And I started thinking, I bet, you know, the ants probably don't really appreciate what he's doing to their homes.
Right.
So I wrote a story from the ants' point of view. So I wrote that story. Then I wrote it. And then I got another idea for things the ants would go through. Like what happens when it rains, you know, the stuff like that would happen to an ant colony. And that's how this all got started. And then people read them and suggested I start publishing them. And I was like, published one. I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, never self-published it. No idea what it is. I mean, literally no idea what it was doing. I had to hire an illustrator. And then I loved it. I loved it. I've got 11 books published now, self-published. And the last one was picked up by publisher Morgan James out of New York City, that by the time this airs will be relaunched. So it's been kind of an exciting path that, you know, I got picked up by a publisher. I mean, only about 2%, 3% of all authors that are self-published get picked up by a New York City based publisher. So that I must be doing something right. But I think the key message is that I feel like I have found at this late stage in life what I've been put on this earth to do. And it's great kid content. Apparently I'm good at it. You know, I've had a publisher pick me up. I'm in schools, you know, reading to kids. We've given away over 1,000 books this year at classrooms in my community. So it's just, I'm having a blast. I've never been happier professionally. And it's all because of my grandson stomping on anthills in the backyard one day. It's just crazy how, you know, life happens, you know, in unexpected ways. But yeah, that's how I got where I'm at.
Hey, that's awesome, dude. That's what I'm talking about, D, being able to jump ship like that and then one day just being on granddad duty.
that was stories. That was it. I mean, I put him to the stories came back because the first one I did, I was putting him down for a nap. And the thing was, he'd get to pick two stories. I don't know if you're in that grandparent situation yet, but that was the rule. You had to pick two stories. So I said, hey, go grab your two stories. And he said, no, Papa, I want you to tell me a story. And I'm like, okay, what are you wanting to make up a story about? I mean, he looked around the room and saw my wife's medicine bottle. And he said, I want you to make up a story about medicine. So wow. And as a grandparent, you're on the spot. You can't say no. And you could, but you know, you're not, the last thing you would do is disappoint your grandchild. So I made up a story, and apparently it was pretty good. And that kept occurring over the course of a while. Then he started asking his parents to do it. And that did not go over very well because they weren't as creative as I was. And, you know, and then of course it's different being a grandparent than a parent, because as a parent, when you're putting your kids down to reading them stories, you've got so much other stuff on your mind because you've got to work to provide for the family. You know, you've got all this, you got to run them here and there. You got to worry about what school they're going to go to, where you're going to get the next meal, where you're going to get back their clothes and all that. I remember that as a parent. And you're just trying to get those books read, get them in bed, go downstairs and zombie for a while. You know, grab a beer, whatever you want to do. Now, as a grandparent, you actually pay attention to what you're reading a little bit more. And as I was making up the stories, I wanted to get certain things across to the grandkids as I was making up the stories, you know. And then as I was reading books to them, I noticed some of the things I really didn't like about them.
they would use words that the kids didn't understand or didn't know. I don't know how many times you've read a book to a kid where the kid goes, would stop you and say, I don't know, what's that word mean? Or they would just let you read the word, even though they didn't know.
Also, there's so many books out there, and Goodnight Moon is a perfect example, where the text is on dark backgrounds. And if you're in a dark room, you cannot read the words. And I'm at the age now where I can't read as well as I used to. And if there's a night light on or whatever, and I'm trying to read a book, I'll only be able to read the darn words. So I implemented in my books, the background is white wherever their words are. So whoever's reading the book can read the darn book and not have to worry about that situation. So I've been able to implement a lot of things I didn't like about the children's books. Also, part of that too is I knew if this is going to be successful, I had to be unique in what I was creating because I didn't want my books to be cookie cutter like everybody else's children's books. So the design pattern I used was based on the video from Aha, I'm On Me. And I don't know if you know what I'm talking about or not, Don, but it was revolutionary when it came out. It's a grayscale video with color popping in and out all the time. So my books are designed with a grayish grayscale background, but anything I wanted the reader to really notice, I put in color. So the colors would pop a little bit more. So that's another thing I hope separates my books from the other ones that are out there. But I wouldn't have been able to do that unless I was a grandparent, because I would have been paying attention to that type of stuff, because I wouldn't have had time to reflect on what I was reading, you know, and get done reading the book, and the kids would go home and I think, you know, that book I just read was really stupid. how did this person even get this on paper and all that type of stuff, you know? But you also really appreciate like the Dr. Seuss stuff and some of these other books that are out there, because it's so darn good. And I've often thought about, okay, I'm going to write a book like Dr. Seuss where everything rhymes, you know? If you think about that, creating like 28 pages of stuff where it's got that rhythm of music that his books have, you know, now, you know, I want to try it, but Jesus, that's just crazy to me. That is just crazy what he's able to pull off. And there's other authors too, like that too, that pull stuff off like that.
Hey, you're right about that, dude. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, what kind of creativity?
Was yeah, there it's nuts. Any, yeah.
Was there any tag team action going on with that?
Yeah, it's just nuts. It's nuts. And, you know, another thing I do is I want to make sure there's stuff for the adults in there, because who's buying the books? My customers don't have money. So if the adults don't like reading my books, they're not going to buy the book, and they're not going to continue pull that book off a shelf to read to that kid. So I've got little Easter eggs in there for the adults that the kids probably have no idea what it is, but it works its way through the story. And like the clouds in my books are, you know, some are shaped like teddy bears and stuff like, you know, puppies and all that type of stuff, rabbits. And then I've got a hula girl, you know, those vibrating hula girls on the dashboard of a car that shows up in one of my books. The kid's not going to know what that is, but I thought I might get a chuckle out of an adult or two. So there's little things like that sprinkled in that I hope, you know, it would appeal to me if I'm reading, like, oh my God, that author stuck that in there. That's pretty cool. So yeah, that's kind of some of the stuff I tried to do to entice the person who reading the book to maybe buy the next one or the next one or the next one.
Me like you, dude. So it's probably the most difficult part about getting this book all put together and published, or should I say multiple books?
It's all the marketing. Yeah, well, it's marketing, because your book could be the best book out there, but if nobody knows about it, nobody's going to buy it. And I'm in a town of about 45,000 people. And if everybody in the town buys my book, I'm still not going to come out ahead, because I'm paying my illustrator. So that's the hardest part, is getting people to recognize that your stuff is good. Now, when I first started doing this, I knew my friends would buy it just because they're going to buy it. You know, just like I would buy their beer if they made beer, or wherever it would be. But it's the regional aspect of this, where people who don't know you, that you want to purchase the book. So it's getting known outside of my own little world. That's the hardest part about this. And the rewarding part about it, you know, eventually is, I've had other authors or other people who had no idea who I was read the books and tell me how they, I don't want to say affected, but that's a strong word to use, but it, how the book resonated with them. You know, I've joined a couple of co-op groups where authors help each other out, and had them review some of my books, and some of the responses I've got have been extremely positive. So that's been the really rewarding part about that. But marketing is one. And then the most frustrating part about this is, you know, once I did a few of these, I thought, okay, maybe I'll look for a publisher or an agent, you know, just see what that's like. So in the world of children's books, publishers and agents do not want the book complete. They just want the manuscript. So I did too much work. I had the book done. So I was on a call one time with three agents, and said, so will you ever take a book that's complete? And they said, no. So basically the publishers and the agents want the book. They want control of the IP. They want control of the book so they can get the illustration and all that stuff they want. But I am the author. I created this stuff, and I know what I want the book to look like in my head. I know why the words are there. How can somebody who doesn't know why the words are there put the pictures to the words? I just find that completely ass backwards. You know, I don't know. That's just my opinion. So in order to find the publisher to, you know, hopefully get me, you know, the recognition nationally or whatever, that maybe will help get this to be a point where I'm, you know, able to, I would love to travel and read to kids and speak to kids and all that type of stuff at some point, visit libraries. But in order to do that, I had somebody, you got to find somebody to believe in what your product is. And the people with the power, the publishers. I got very fortunate with Morgan James Publishing because they let me keep my IP. The only thing that has changed is the front cover and the back cover of the book. Everything else on the inside is the same. That is extremely rare. And I even had the contract that said, if I can use that IP for whatever I want after this, you know, after this, you know, book is re-released and all that type of stuff. That's really, really rare. So I guess to answer your question, the two most frustrating things is, I guess it kind of blends together. It's just finding somebody to believe in you to get the word out that your product is quality. And there's messages within your product that will resonate with kids and or parents. That's hard. That's hard.
Hard indeed. You're so right on that, man. Congrats on that, because that's huge, being able to keep your creative juices with that and keep your IP. That's freaking huge.
Well, it's, it's mine. I hate to be selfish about it, but yeah, it's my brain that created all this stuff. And it's no different than a songwriter. And it's no different than a movie guy who writes movie scripts or anything like that. I created it. So how could a guy create a movie and then have somebody else tell him what the scenes are going to be like? I mean, that to me, that's very similar to what this is. And maybe that's the way that world works. I have no idea. Because I talked to some publishers and they said, well, if we took a pick your manuscript, would you be willing to part with your illustrator? They're like, no. She's been through this with me for now 8 books, you know? I'm not going to toss her aside. I mean, I just don't think that's... She was there from the beginning, and, you know, I just don't think that's the way you treat people.
Amen to that. That's what I'm talking about, indeed. You love to see it, indeed. So, my goodness, since you're going on a tour promoting your work with your wonderful books, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. When I sit down to write, I don't intentionally write to have a message within that book, if that makes sense. I just get an idea and I just start writing, and somehow the message always ends up in the book, if that makes sense. So here's an example. I've got, like I said, I got 11 books published, but I've got like another 12 or 13 written on the computer I'm using here right now. The last one I wrote, I was at a school, and this is what I talk to kids a lot about, is idea creation. So I was at a school in the wintertime and got done with it. I was getting ready to leave. I couldn't find my coat. Again, that's a sign of age. I don't know if you're losing stuff down or not. So I was looking, going all over the school trying to find my coat. And I just thought, you know what? A good story would be if the prince lost his crown. And what would he do if he lost his crown? And so I've got it written that he lost his crown. Somebody pointed out, but I don't know how to end it yet, because does he get in trouble for losing his crown? Or does his mom, the queen, understand that sometimes you just mess up? So I got the idea, but I didn't have I got the idea without the message, if that makes sense. So I know I can create some sort of message at the end of that story about the prince thinks he's going to get in major trouble because he lost the crown. But I think I'm going to make it where, you know, everybody makes a mistake. The queen's not really mad at him, just wants him to be more careful next time. You know, that type of thing, because everybody screws up. I know you don't, Dom, probably, did any other. So the question... You know, the question I get from kids that I don't get from adults so much is where the ideas come from. And it's just life, man. It's just stuff that's an example. It's just life that And if you think about my life versus your life and everybody else's life, similar things happen to us all the time. And there's basic principles like listening to your parents and lying and getting in trouble, you know, all that type of stuff. It's just what varies is the scenario where that stuff takes place, if that makes sense. Because another idea I got, somebody told me to write a Halloween story, but my aunts don't celebrate Halloween because they're not people, right? So the story I created was about the aunts being told not to eat the candy that falls on the patio because it's bad for them. So that story ended up being about, you know, listening to the queen and making sure you do what the elders tell you to do because the prince tried the candy and he had a sugar rush and destroyed the colony, yada, 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 yada. But also, at the end, you know, the message is, you know, you need to listen to people, you're going to get in trouble because he gets grounded, basically. But at the end, the last line of the story is the queen is talking to her primary advisor, Sir Alexander, and she goes, I don't know what I'm going to do with this boy. And Sir Alexander says, all you can do is love him. Just love him. So there's also that simple message to all of us parents who are like so frustrated with our kids that all you can do is love them. They're going to screw up. You know, so there's little things like that that don't come to me until I'm writing it that, you know, kind of pop in here and there. So I guess to answer your question, where do you get your ideas? I don't get a lot of that from adults a whole lot. But when I'm in classrooms, that's one of the primary things they want me to talk about is because these kids are 7 and 8 and 9 are having to create these stories and they don't know where to get the ideas. So I go, what'd you guys do today at recess? I played on the monkey bars. It's like, okay, let's write a story about playing on the monkey bars. What do you think monkeys play on human bars? You know, and just, you know, just twist stuff up.
Hey, that's great, man. That's so true indeed. Yeah, a lot of folks don't really tap into that creativity, and that's the beauty of kids because they don't have those filters yet.
No, they don't. And their brains are malleable, you know, and that, I think that's one of the reasons they could be taken advantage of so easily by adults. But their brains haven't been, I hate to say corrupted, but they've seen lions, but lions can be purple. I mean, lions can be whatever color you want them when you're creative. And that's what I try to get across to these kids is that, because I will talk about zoos. I go, what's your favorite animal in the zoo? And somebody will say a tiger. What color is a tiger? And I go, remember, the tiger could be any color you want it to be. And then I go, okay, if a tiger had a job at the zoo, what would the job be at the zoo? You know, and then the kids will answer one thing or another. And then we work off that premise. And one of the best ones I did recently was a kid picked a cheetah. And I go, what would the cheetah do? And he would deliver things because he's so fast. Ah. So we created a story where there's a pizza place in the zoo and the cheetah delivered pizza to all the animals. And I go, okay, so what animal would he deliver to? Monkeys. Okay, what kind of pizza do you think monkeys eat? Now think about this for a minute. And the kid goes, banana. I was like, yes. So he gets banana. So we created this whole scenario like in 5 minutes and created our own story. So that's one of the things I try to do when I visit the classrooms is see where they're at in the writing process. And sometimes they're too young for that, obviously, but like the first and second graders, third graders, they're writing. It's amazing what kids are doing in school these days, but they're writing narratives or, you know, nonfiction or fiction and stuff like that. And one of the issues I'm hearing is that, and it's really not an issue, it's just they don't have experience, is idea creation. Where do they get the ideas? And I said, just pay attention to what you do. You know, what'd you do last night at home? We look around the classroom and, you know, what can you write a story about in the classroom? Stuff like that.
Me like indeed. So indeed, you probably need to start putting bananas on pizza for humans to really get them off to rock.
There you go. Yeah. 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 Well, the flamingos had shrimp on their pizza, just to let you know. I think the bears had fish or something like that. So we only got three or four animals. That made fun, you know. So yeah, and to me, that is a blast. I mean, just sitting down with 20 kids and watching their brains work, you know, and then, you know, I won't go in a classroom without giving them books. And that's another story, but the hugs and stuff you get after that, you know, and that, I don't know if you've ever read to a classroom down. That's not, you know, it's something, it's just the kid, first of all, the teachers appreciate it so much. And then, especially if the teachers engage with the author prior to them getting there, and, you know, you can bring up topics that they want you to talk about. And then if they participate in there and you said, you know, hey, you saw what Mr. Kintruff said about the plot, you know, there's always a problem that needs to be solved and then yada, yada, yada. But just watching them watch you read is just so cool. So cool. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is kids don't have books, because that's one of the first things I realized when I started going to classrooms 4 years ago, was I'd get books out to the kids, and the teacher would say, you know, Ron, that's probably the only book that kid has at home. And it blew me away. Or that, you know, kid's parents are going to throw that book away. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, that's just the situation, you know, that's the home situation. So I started asking kids, and I've talked to kids all age groups, you know, high school on down. And I go, hey, do you guys like to read? And what I'm finding out is the younger the kids, the more they like to read. Start getting up in like a junior high, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, they don't like to read as much. And in talking to some kids, I think the reason is the stuff they're being told to read in school, they're being told to read in school. It's not their choice. So it might not be something they're interested in. So they don't want to read it. If that, you know what I mean? I mean, and then, you know, as kids get older, they don't want to be told what to do anyway. So they have this distaste for reading, and then they enter high school, and then they're asked, you know, to read, you know, Shakespeare, all this other stuff. And I just think it's harder for them to accept that that's something they should read. I just wonder if schools could start giving these kids options to, of the classics. You know, I still think they need to read the classics. But I think it's a tug of war between getting the kids to love reading, but providing them with material that they would like to read, whether it's integrating more graphic novels into school systems or having more open reading. Because the more I'm doing this, Don, I'm finding out that literacy is a huge problem in this country. And it's in our community where I'm from too. And in the state of Illinois, it's like 1/3 of the kids don't read at their grade level. If you think about that's only 1/3, that's a lot. Because if you're illiterate as an adult, you're more likely to get into drugs, crime, unemployment, all the stuff that's hurting our communities and hurting our country. So if we can just get these kids to like reading, because no matter what job you have these days, and I was in the IT world for a long time, you know, 30 years, you still got to learn how to, you still got to read, whether it's a blog or training or anything, it's just on a different format. You've got to be able to read. You got to be able to comprehend. Even I talk to kids, even if you're a basketball player or a football player, you got playbooks.
Yep.
You got to be able to comprehend what's being put in front of you. And it's somewhat frustrating for me as an author that the importance is not being placed on reading. And maybe it's always been like this. I don't know, Dom, but you know, we had books all over the house when I was growing up, you know, we kept our books for our grandkids, but apparently that's not, you know, not as common as I thought out there. And I don't know if I can get one kid that I visit with giving my book and all of a sudden he maybe has a little bit more love of reading. I think I've done the work that I'm supposed to be doing. What's that next? Would I like to make money doing this? Yeah, definitely. But would I like a kid maybe turn the path and not initially go into whatever life he may have chosen if he didn't find a love of reading? That's well worth it.
Hey, 100% agree with you on that. That is freaking awesome indeed. Well, hey, speaking of questions you haven't heard of before, a fun one for you. And I guess we'll go with the wonderful, adorable book that'll probably be out by the time this comes out. So if that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Oh, Jesus. It would be the best pizza you've ever eaten, man. It would be the food that you can never get your hands on, but eventually get your hands on. So let me tell you why. This happened in real life. The story of Adorable is the prince is having a great day, okay? Great day. People start coming up to him and asking, hey, what's, you know, God, have you heard the news? That type of thing. He goes, what the heck is going on? So he goes, you know, I'll ask my mom. She's the queen. She has to know what's going on. Walks into the house. Sir Alexander, the right-hand man, says, hey, be quiet. Walks in. The queen's holding a baby, holding his new baby sister, whose name is Adorable. But they're going to call her Dora for short. The prince freaks out, runs away, because his life was perfect. He didn't need a baby sister. His mom didn't need a baby because everything was good. And he flies away, runs and ends up talking to the wisest creature in the neighborhood, who's an owl, of course. And the owl tells him, you know, your mom has enough love, not only for you, but the colony, and also for Adorable. You're okay. So it's a story about jealousy. He ends up going back, and then when he gets back, the baby calls him by his name. So he obviously is now smitten with Adorable, but it's a story about jealousy. because this happened with my grandkids is when the new baby's there, all of a sudden the baby's getting attention and the middle child or the other child is not getting the attention. So it becomes a problem. So I read this to schools. I go, how many of you have a little brother or sister? And they raise their hands. I go, how many of you, who got the attention when the baby came home? They said, my brother or sister. So that's what Adorable's about. So it would be that piece of food that you want so bad that you can't have, that somebody else has. But eventually, I think you should be able to get it. Now that could be whatever piece of meat you want it to be. That's a question you probably ask everybody, isn't it? That's when you've got marked down and then checked off. Yeah. Yeah. But that's the theme behind Adorable. So to answer your question, it'd be that meat, that food that's unattainable to you, but eventually you can find it and grab it. Somebody else had it, but you didn't think you'd be able to get it. Maybe it would be a dessert, Dom, that you don't think you're going to get because, you know, sitting up on that shelf, you can't quite reach the shelf and you're like really mad. You run out of the backyard, not be able to get that chocolate cream pie, which would be what I would want. And then your mom calls you back in and says, you can have the pie. It's just up on the shelf. I just put it up there. Don't worry about it, dude. And so off you go.
Oh, you love to see it. Well, coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive.
It's not the one about the food. I thought that was your magical question.
Oh, well, that's the fun question.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So I did a job interview one time, and the guy asked me, if you were an animal, what animal would you be? And I was like, my God, if I get the job because of that answer, I don't know if I want the job. But anyway, go ahead, sir. What does that have to do with my qualifications? Sorry, sir. What is the most important question?
Was the answer kangaroo because you have a pouch of knowledge?
I you know, that would have been great. Or kangaroo because it makes me jumpy. But I just stared at the guy for a while and I go, you know, I do have to answer the question. As this, I honestly don't remember what he said, but anyway.
Well, ain't that type of question. It actually is. If you're to wake up tomorrow and you're 25 again in 2025, what advice would you give to yourself?
Man, that's a relax. Just relax. There's two things you can control: your effort and your attitude. Everything else is going to happen. Whether your effort and your attitude, you can't control how people are going to treat you. It's like being an athlete. You can't control what the refs are going to do. You can't control what the other team's going to do. You can't control what the crowd's going to yell at you. Control what you can control, and things should be okay. That was, I wish I would have told myself when I was 25, because I would get all worked up about things I couldn't control. I think that would be the one thing.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Indeed, it's a good thing. Indeed, it's right. Indeed, because we all need reminders.
Yeah.
Indeed. Straight indeed, because things will happen. Be like, yep, the controller, or should I say the remote controller, only controls so much. The one TV, not all of them. That's right indeed. And also, no, folks need to control their fingers, so that way they can press all of Ron's magical goodies on his website and buy multiple copies of your books. So for those of you who do just those things, what's the best way for folks to do so?
So my books are available wherever books are sold. Okay, so Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and all that. If you go to my website, having listened to this, I have a menu item up there that says podcast. If you go up there and click on there, there should be a spot where it says get free ebook. So you can get a free ebook, and there's coloring pages you can download too. And there's a password required, and the password required is podcast. So you can go out there, download a free copy of Adorable, and also get some coloring pages for whoever in your life might like to color. And there's also a place you could purchase the book on my website, and all of my other books are out there too. The reviews for Adorable, the reviews for all my other books are out there on my website too. So how do you get to my website, Dom? Well, here's what you do. It's www.papatellmeabook.com, papatellmeabook.com, or ronkinscherf.com, which may be harder for more people to spell. But those are the two options. There's a free ebook out there for you. Get it, grab it. If you like it, great. Buy some other stuff for me. And you can read the reviews of my other books and pick what you want out there. But again, wherever books are sold, generally, you can find my stuff. But go to my website, check it out.
Woohoo! Check it out like a library book, my friends. That's right, indeed. They say Papa was a rolling stone. Well, don't worry, folks. Papa can tell you some stories, too. That's right.
That's true. That's true.
In this case, multiple books.
Yes.
For all ages that are fun.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I know we're wrapping up, but that's another thing too about this. And when I talk to other people, is when you put that first book out, you have no idea whether people are going to like it. I like it, but it's like a singer writing a song and singing it for the first time in front of people. I mean, that I still ask the kids every time, do you like the story? Because you never know. And that's the thing, is I'm throwing myself out there in front of people every time I release a book. And they're very easily can say, Ron, that sucks, you know? And that's another part about it is the grammar issue and all that type of stuff, that because I'm writing these books for kids. And the last thing I want is a teacher to see all the grammar, you know, all that. Anyway, that's another story, but that's the scary part. But all my stuff out on my website, head on over, take a peek. Let me know what you think.
Woohoo! Serve that right, folks. Don't just buy it and cop some copies of the ebook and the coloring pages. Also, leave a review, y'all. Helps keep the man going indeed, because you heard him earlier. He's got at least 11 or 12 more in the hopper ready to deploy.
Yes, I do. I do.
So that's right. So get ready, y'all. Get ready indeed and support him while he's getting ready indeed. Well, Benny, parting words before we close up shop?
No, Dom, I just appreciate you being interested in my story, and I hope the folks enjoyed our chat. I did. And best of luck to you.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in. And if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for 3. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.